Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of Wannabe Games, and may the fourth be with you to my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
May the fourth be with you. I am Craig Campbell. I am the owner of Nerdburger Games, and we, I make tabletop role-playing games. We all do. Everybody on this show does, including our returning guest, Joey. May the fourth be with you.
Hi, I'm Joey of Drowning Moon Studios. I've been on a couple of times, but I am glad to be back, and may the fourth be with you all. Well,
thank you so much.
You're
coming back.
Like you're lisping it. Like when I say it, I'm like, did I say it right?
May the fourth be with you.
I'm accidentally lisping on it.
But yes, Joey, thank you for coming back on the show. Tell us, tell our audience a little bit about yourself. Of course, we know you.
So I am the owner and primary designer of Drowning Moon Studios, which is a TTRPG publisher. I have produced games called Follow Me Down, Mage to Order. Praetermidium is the most recent one, which is a tarot-based game where you explore dreams as your character, where you can manipulate the dream stuff around you. And I am probably getting back into doing my own podcast very soon, but I don't want to like announce it until I'm absolutely sure.
Well, we'll be waiting to hear about that, I'm sure. Or not, no pressure. And I'm glad that I'm so glad that I heard you pronounce your new game out loud. So now when I'm pitching it to people, I can say it correctly.
I picked the weird long Latin name that nobody knows what it is.
It catches people's eyes, and it's a beautiful book, and I do recommend it because I think that the concept of just like exploring that like that dream space is, I don't know, I think that's really interesting. So again, thank you for coming back on, and today we're talking about pacing. Craig, speaking of pacing, usually the way we pace things is I throw it to you to introduce the topic.
Pacing in RPGs, that is to say the kind of the speed and regularity at which different types of scenes come, how the GM splits those up to create what we like to think of as kind of the roller coaster ride of there might be, you know, build up and drama and role play and exploration toward an action sequence or a combat or something, and then there's a recovery from that and you kind of go back down and you do some of these other things, and then you build back up to the next one, and all the different ways that we can manipulate that, the different things that we can do and kind of work into pacing to create kind of an interesting ride for the game in a, you know, a satisfying kind of sequence of everything. And you know, as we get into GMing stuff too, game design stuff too, we might also talk a little bit about how those sorts of things can be potentially integrated into the game's design of like how the game works. One of the things that as gamers or as designers we hear about sometimes, and not every game has this strongly defined, but some games do, is the game loop, which is, you know, a series of things that happen in order to tell one adventure or one story. And that loop often is built on the idea of pacing things in a certain way. So let's dive in this. And I'm going to shake things up today by taking Jess's question. Ooh. And throwing the pacing of the show off a little bit and asking Joey, you selected this topic. Well, what drew you to it?
Mostly, there's a couple of different things. As a GM and also as a player, pacing is always a challenge, especially if you happen to have a larger table, like anything six and above, you're going to have to try to juggle some of the scenes between them. And I think it's interesting to explore like what you can do to make sure that it doesn't drag or that some of your players are bored or it's just creeping along or maybe even moving too fast if you're jumping from place to place. So there are like some techniques that I like to use as a GM, and in the latter part of this, there's some I actually like to use as a designer. And I think it's kind of a universal thing. Every GM just kind of needs to work on their pacing or at least have like a plan to pace things so your players are still engaged.
What are some of those tools that we can use as a GM to make sure, like, I think that that's a huge thing, making sure that our players aren't bored, no one's feeling like there's just like this lull in the game, and not every game has those tools built in, and sometimes we have to do it on our own. So like, what do we do directly? Let's start talking about that.
So one of the things that I really like to do is, especially if I have like a party of players who have split up from one another, like they're all doing different things, instead of running like one scene all the way through, I let kind of run them concurrently, and I bounce back and forth between the groups. That way everybody is able to be engaged within like a certain amount of time. And it is a little bit more work as a GM, but it also helps keep the players more interested in what's currently going on, and even like more interested in what is going on with the other players, because it kind of gives like a little bit of suspense. It's like, this player is out, you know, searching for this thing, whereas these players have gone shopping. And if you're breaking up the scene and going back and forth, it's a lot easier to tell a story that's gonna be like cohesive and not lag, and no one will get bored.
A thing that I like to do when I'm trying to set the pacing for my games too is, you know, I will give them also something else that they can be chewing on in the meantime. Maybe there's like a puzzle box or something else that they can be spending kind of their quote unquote like downtime as a player thinking about, filling out, looking at, especially if I know that there's going to be those scenes where a couple of my players aren't going to be as engaged. Maybe they're not there. Maybe it's a spotlight scene on another character. And just having sometimes actually something physically to manipulate can do wonders for that as well. But I feel like that doesn't fit in every single game, unfortunately. It really fits in with like the fantasy games I play, or like a mystery game. I haven't tried it in other genres other than those two, like where we have magic stuff, or we have like a mystery, like you're trying to solve this murder and here's a clue. And it just doesn't for me fit in like, let's say, a sci-fi game, or at least I haven't figured out a way to make it fit in a genre like that.
One of the things that I find myself thinking about in relation to, you know, making sure things aren't dragging, making sure different, you know, your players are engaged and you keep the pace going well, kind of in conjunction with some of the things you said, is to give thought to the specifics of the player group, what they are like as a group, and also the length of the game session, because there will be some guidance that kind of comes out. There's some things you can do differently based on that. Like if you have a player group that is, you know, you've got players who are, they're happy to be there to observe the story. Like if they're not as engaged in the moment, things can slow down a little bit and their character can be not as engaged for a while, but their thing is to like just kind of absorb everything that's happening. And that's one of the things that they enjoy about it, where other players might be like, I want to be involved as much as possible. I like to be engaged. And so you find yourself adjusting pacing to making sure that the right character, you know, the right players are, well, actually all players are really getting what they're there for. But you do have some leeway with certain you know, play styles. And then the length of the game session can come into play too, because if you're playing a long game session, especially if the players are forgiving on this sort of thing, you've got time. Things can lag for a little bit because you've got a long session. You're going to get to that big moment or the next, you know, the two big moments that you want to have happen before the end of the session. But if you're, you know, have a group that's got limited availability, short sessions, or you have sessions that get interrupted regularly, like you might, you know, if you're playing at the home of somebody who has kids, like it's a 4-hour game, but it's really only going to be 3 hours worth of game because they're going to have to deal with kid stuff a little bit. And you all understand that, you know, what the length of your session is. Like if you're playing just 2 or 3 hours, maybe, you know, you have to adjust to be like, okay, we got to really kind of keep things moving all the time. That may come out of like the game choice. You play a game that is built toward kind of keeping things moving all the time. You don't maybe play stuff that gets real quiet and role play oriented, where things kind of slow down a lot. And so just kind of keeping all of that in mind, there's so many variables. When Joey picked this topic, it had been sitting in our little list of topics for a while. Yeah. And I found myself thinking every time I looked at it, I was like, geez, this is almost like, you know, one of those topics that could be split into like three different subgroups because there's so many variables that come into play. But we'll do our best in the time we have. We'll try to keep it all coming and keep you all engaged and not have too many lulls in the conversation, as it were.
When you said that, like these game sessions, like you said 4 hours, and I think a lot of us consider like a game session, like, oh yeah, it's going to be about 4 hours. 4 hours is like kind of the sweet spot for that. And that's actually a long time to be sitting in one spot and being focused and engaged on one thing. That's half of a work day when you think about it. That's a long, long time. So there's a reason, like movies, for example, you know, they max out maybe about 2 hours unless you're a certain director who wants to make a really long ass movie. But the way that people used to do this in the past is that they would have a whole intermission. Like you have intermissions in plays, you have intermissions in operas, and they're planned out at a certain spot in advance. And that's a tool that you can use as a GM, like in general, like you can plan it out like, at this 2 hour point, we are going to take a bio break. It's going to be a 10 minute break and we can all kind of do whatever we want, stretch, check your phone, go get some water, go use the bathroom, whatever it is. I think this is especially helpful at like a convention. But you as the GM can also like plan out like, oh, I know it's going to be about 2 hours on this half, 2 hours in this half. And you can use that to kind of propel the players along up to that point. And maybe even like push for the midpoint climax or the midpoint churn at that point, leave on a cliffhanger. So we're all ready to come back on the next half and just design around that. It can feel a little artificial. It can feel like you're pushing the players a little bit when you do something like this, or even pushing yourself. It might require you to edit on the fly. But especially for a convention game, I find that very helpful. Maybe not the kind of tool you can pull out for your regular 4 hour long session games that you play weekly or bi-weekly with your friends, but like really pacing around that time period, I think can help.
Actually, one of the things, and you mentioned like jumping off of the kind of setting something that pushes the players forward or pushes the story forward. Another thing, and this doesn't work for every game or every group, is having timed adventures where mm-hmm. like the clock is counting down. They have to do the thing within a certain amount of time or something catastrophic will happen or something, they'll lose something or something like that. Like giving them that feeling of both anticipation and also we really need to focus on this to make sure that it's resolved, because if not, there will be consequences. And I don't do that all the time, but for some styles and some groups, it works really, really well.
It can keep them from dragging their feet, like especially with a mystery game where they're probably going to be spending a lot of time discussing red herrings and going down the wrong path, and you want to give them some sort of like you can't just BS around and be perfect. You have to like take some risks. Taking something away from them or like literally giving them a timer, I think can really work when you're in the right setting. I think that's a great tool.
And it can, I find myself thinking quite a, and this has been on my mind a lot more and more, because I find myself comparing how different types of storytelling compare to each other and how you can take techniques from one into the other. Like pacing is a thing that happens in every type of storytelling. Like you see it in graphic novels and comics and in fiction novels, you see it in TV shows. There it's kind of dictated oftentimes by the commercial breaks, but you see it in movies and you see it in different types of, you know, different genres of each of those things. And one of the things I found myself thinking about when we were prepping for this one was like, you know, I mentioned like the roller coaster, like you got the low point, you got the high point, you kind of, you have a big moment and then you decompress and then you do some stuff and then you have a big moment and then you decompress and then you have some stuff. And, you know, and Jess made the comment about how, you know, the length of a movie, and I found immediately into my head was like, well, you know, many horror movies, many of your typical horror movies are about 90 minutes because it's going to be, you know, big scare, kill scene, whatever, decompress, build character and story and everything, and then a ramp up to the big scare kill scene or whatever. And then there's like the, you know, different peaks and valleys, like you have the big moments, and then there's like the little jump scares and whatnot that kind of punctuate. And the reason horror movies tend to be 90 minutes, I think, in part, is, you know, there's a number of factors that are in there, but I think one that works in its favor is that a horror movie can be exhausting. You know, it can be one of those things that really kind of takes a lot out of you if it's done really well. And so like 90 minutes is plenty, you know, yeah. Like that's doesn't need to be longer than that. And then like, you know, but an action movie, like I was Jess was saying, like 2 hours for a movie, but I was like, well, you know, all your Marvel movies are like 210, 230, you know, 2 hours and 10 to 2 hours and 30 minutes long. And I'm like, but that's because they're action movies and they're going to have build up to the big action sequences, and action sequences are extended. They're big, long scenes a lot of the time. So they take up a lot yes. of time. So they can have 4 or 5 action sequences, but those 4 or 5 action sequences are going to eat up half of the runtime yeah. of the movie because they're so long. And that's why those movies tend to get that long. Now you could do an action story where it happened in 90 minutes or shorter time frame in RPGs, because RPGs get weird because you have to go into combat rounds and that, you know, that messes with your time. But you know, you can have a certain number of big moments like that in your game session, and think about it in terms of like the genre of the game and that you're playing, or the genre of that story. Like there's, you know, you could be playing a game that, you know, has the capability of being a lot of different things. You can play a combat game to be just like a combat focused game like D&D, right? You can play it to be like it's all about combat, you know, fighting the bad guys and defeating the bad guys. But you can also have adventures that are more moody and atmospheric, and you can have adventures that are more political and role play oriented and things. And like, how much can you fit in the time in order to take advantage of all the things, taking into account, do you have a play group that really, when they get into a heavy role play scene, they'll drag that thing, they'll play that, they'll chew on that scenery for 45 minutes because they love that sort of thing? Or do you have a group that is like, when we get to a fight, like we want big, huge action fights with tons of bad guys, and it's going to take a long time to run a combat? And keeping all of those things in mind for what the story type can fit well into your time frame. It's one of the things that, like, I mean, I designed, not to talk about the designer stuff, but I designed Die Laughing, and it plays in about 2 hours, but it's also, you know, it's a light rules light thing, and it's, so it plays as like we're gonna have a handful of big scenes where there's gonna be monsters that are gonna kill characters, but it, you know, it goes up and down, up and down, up and down real quick. It plays in 2 hours. It plays like a horror movie. Now you can't always do that with a role-playing game, because, you know, there are certain things that happen mechanically that are going to eat up more time, but those types of things can be, you can, again, well, like I said, it's killing me. It's like, there's so many variables, but you know, we're going to spitball as many as we can against the wall. That's one of the things to give some thought to, like what are the subgenre of what you're playing. And you can have different game sessions in this with the same game and same group be paced a little differently based on what the, you know, the type of adventure requires.
One of my biggest frustrations when I'm GMing games that prioritize combat is that combat especially can drag for a really, really long time. Like, even if the players are performing actions during it, it's so many roles and so many counter roles and so on and so forth. So I'm always interested to see what people do to make that type of combat not be just kind of like a slog and make players remain engaged and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the roughest part. in some games you're fighting against the mechanics that are long and boring, and I think a lot of designers have had ideas, GMs too, like, oh, here's how I can fix D&D's combat system because it's so boring because everyone's waiting for their turn, blah 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 blah. There are some people implement like different initiative rules into there, they homebrew those in, or they throw the, like, okay, you describe what happens, or you're going to play this villain in this scene. Like, some people try to manipulate that way, but, like, I mean, at some point you are fighting with the mechanics, and you can only do as much as the mechanics allow you to do. And then like within those action, like the action scenes, like Craig was talking about in a game like D&D, I mean, what you're taking every combat scene is going to take a hefty amount of time, and balancing that. I mean, if you don't want to be spending all that time doing combat, you really have to think about if the combat scene that you have planned is important for the plot. Is it going to be relevant? Is it going to be interesting? Is it just going to be a bunch of people in one big crowd hitting each other with swords until one of them dies? Is there going to be like a trap that's going off or people running away? Like, thinking about how you can make it more relevant and interesting, the plot can help with that pacing. Putting them at the right, like the story beats can be important as well. Like, are you, all of those things are, you gotta keep them into consideration. Joey, I am right there with you on that. Like, that is my primary frustration with games, with combat, is having someone wait for their turn.
Yeah.
But in real life, a combat, everyone's engaged 100% of the time. You're not the masked goon in the background waiting for the superhero to punch one so then you can go. That's not how it works.
I find myself thinking about, when it comes to things like that, is that within, you know, like you said, fighting against the system, but you can also try to use what the system allows for you and say, you know, do I need this? If you're feeling like your combats are slogging or getting slow and you're having a hard time kind of keeping the pacing to get to the next thing where you really get dragged down into something that takes up a bunch of mechanics, you know, does the fight need to be the big baddie plus their right hand monster, plus, you know, 10 goons? Or can it literally be the big baddie and their right hand monster and just make them a little tougher and they do a little more damage to make the threat real? And so you're not spending the time rolling dice for 10 goons, and the players don't have to whittle their way through 10 goons to get to the baddies. Like, maybe like the big bad and their right hand is probably like the most exciting part of the fight anyway. Unless you've got a player that their character excels at, like, taking out multiple goons at a time. Well, you got to make sure you give them that opportunity occasionally, but it doesn't have to be all the time. Like, you can pare the combat down into, that's why, you know, in games like D&D or any game that has monsters in it, like the one big solo monster, solves a lot of that problem. Like, you don't have all this other extraneous stuff that you know, the ancient red dragon doesn't come with a bunch of other dragons and drakes necessarily. It doesn't have to, you know, like the big monster is enough of a threat unto itself. So you can make sure to pepper those types of situations in so that you get through combats faster. The same thing can be done for any scene that might run terribly long. Like, if you've got you're planning for a role playing, there's going to be some role playing scene where there's going to be like a bunch of information has to be gained, and the characters have to talk to a bunch of NPCs. They have to coerce them in different ways. And they don't know to go find this piece of information until they find this other piece of information first. So it becomes a step ladder of checks that need to be made. Like, maybe if those types of scenes start to get a little long, you can shake it up by saying, okay, we're going to have like one or two NPCs that's going to have everything they need to know. They just have to find the, you know, like maybe a little play to find the right one, and then a couple of checks or some role playing to get the information out of them. You know, there's a number of benefits to all of that. You can keep it tighter with NPCs. You don't have to keep track of so many people that they're all talking to. It's less likely that the group is going to split up in a lot of different ways. So that's a little less for bookkeeping and keeping a track of things for you as a GM. And you can still make it interesting and have like one or two NPCs become like these really interesting characters that potentially become recurring, because like, why wouldn't we go back to this particular information broker? Because they had all the information last time. But this time they want a favor. So you can just build that out.
Kind of jumping off of what Jess said earlier about, you know, giving PCs puzzles to do in the meantime, is something that I kind of enjoy doing while there's combat going on. Like, they're fighting off maybe the big bad or maybe like a bunch of minions, but at the same time, they're also trying to do something like solve a puzzle or like translate ancient runes or like investigate something. That way, it's not just constant combat. It's like feeding them little tidbits of information throughout it. So it's more like you get like, here's a little reward, here's another little reward, that sort of thing.
There are few things more satisfying than having a group that's engaged in time specific things, where you've got a group that's like half the party is in a combat and the other half is defusing the bomb.
Yeah.
You know, or getting the drawbridge up before the horde approaches in the ancient fort where the drawbridge is in disrepair. And then you've got a bunch of players that like they're just thinking about like the combat people are constantly thinking about what their next big move is going to be. They're looking at all their abilities and spells and whatnot. And the people that are solving the problem are, you know, even if when their turn's not coming around, they're thinking, they're brainstorming, they're talking amongst themselves, they're brainstorming ideas for like, how can we get this drawbridge up? What's the best way to contain or defuse this bomb, given what we know about the environment that we're in, what the bomb is? And so you don't put them on the spot to like, okay, now and now defuse the bomb right now. No, they have minutes and minutes beforehand to be talking to each other about it.
But it can make it feel better too. I mean, those are the kinds of action scenes you see in movies. It's not just, I mean, sometimes it is like a cool hallway fight scene or whatever. But like, yeah, we have to keep the bad guy away from the scientist while the scientist does their sciencey thing, or whatever the other players or the other characters are doing. That also is a great way to make sure that you're balancing roles out a little bit more. If you are like, you have all D&D characters are designed for combat, unfortunately that's like their only thing that they do, but I will stop saying bad stuff about them. Let me use Moonpunk for an example. There are some playbooks that are more combat oriented. They're there to protect, they're there to fight, and then there are some that are there to talk, and they're there to grab the attention, that are there to do funny things, and some that are there to like mess with technology. And giving everybody their own role within the combat. Yeah, the combat characters are over here fighting. You guys are over here trying to distract the cops. You guys are over here trying to dismantle this robot that's like terrorizing the dome, whatever it is. And it kind of like, not only is it helping with pacing because everyone's going to be engaged, but also everyone feels like they are doing something in the combat. There's nothing worse than, yeah, my pathetic little wizard who's out of spell slots can't do anything right now. And all I'm going to do if I get involved is get beat up. Like, what am I supposed to do? I keep missing. I don't have a magic weapon to fight this ghost, whatever it is. That sucks. And you want to give him something fun to do. Beat up. Like, what am I supposed to do? I keep missing. I don't have a magic weapon to fight this ghost, whatever it is. That sucks. And you want to give him something fun to do.
I find myself thinking about, again, I think about things in terms of movies so often, the opening to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Make it multiple characters instead of just Indy, but Indy gets into a fight after he finds out that he's been poisoned, and he spends the entire fight fending off the attackers but also trying desperately to get to the antidote, which is getting kicked around this room where everybody's running around and doing stuff. So you could have something like that happening. That's going to, like, even if everybody's fighting, there's something else that's happening that might come into proximity to the character, and the player has to kind of pay attention and keep track of like, okay, what am I going to do if the antidote gets kicked into my square? You know, who needs it for, you know, can I grab it? How quickly can I get it to the person or persons that need it? I have to be thinking about that. So that becomes something that engages people too. We've kind of gone from pacing the adventure overall to pacing within the combat, but that's part of it.
It's a huge part of it. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's where all these issues come up. If you're playing the right game, if you're playing a game that has the right mechanics, you don't need to think about it so hard.
Well, D&D also came out of the wargaming community, so that's why it's so, you know, concentrated on combat and what you can do to fight, because they built off of the rules of things that they were doing in the wargaming community. But adding more role-playing elements like over time has brought in a lot more people who are not necessarily interested in like the little hex squares and moving their people around and that sort of thing. So it's kind of a compromise now, but there's still remnants of it. And it's not even just D&D, it's games that are similar to it that still have those remnants And for people who are really roleplay invested, it can really feel like they're just slowing the game down. Whereas there are other people who are like, that's their favorite part.
And that's why it's important to balance like your session, like what, knowing what they're going to be doing. So you are building up to a satisfying story arc, because a story arc traditionally, you know, you're building up to some sort of climax. You're going to have a denouement. Where is that going to happen? What does that look like? And sprinkling in, if your game does include combat or not, sprinkling in those scenes as they go so they fit that pace, rather than letting just like, don't let this pendulum swing so far that you're just letting the entire table control the pace. Because when you get five people trying to make a story together, their minds are all in five different places. You're kind of the director, making sure that it is getting to where it needs to be, whether or not that's, oh, they're taking too long, I'm going to set up a timer, or whether it's, you know, giving them something to do, or whether or not it's dropping in the fight scene right now. And instead of waiting for them to get to it, well, the bad guys show up for you instead, whatever that looks like for your specific table. So going in, and I know I've cut out, but again, I'm going to Frankenstein this episode together. I don't know what's wrong. So what about design? Like, keeping all of this in mind as designers, what do we do so our GMs don't have to have all these questions and discussions and getting burnt out on making sure people aren't bored at their table?
One of the things that I'm really, I mean, I kind of already mentioned this in the GMing section with like having timed adventures, but I especially like, as a design aspect, having clocks. Like, this is how the story's going to go. It's going to progress, whether the PCs are actively trying to change it or interact with it or not. Hopefully you're making it engaging enough that they'll interact with it, but it's kind of like having the timer built into the mechanics, where when you're structuring the game that you're going to run, you keep track, like almost like a pie chart of this, from this period to this period, this is going to happen. From this period to this period, this is going to happen. And the PC's actions can affect those things, but it's still having, you know, like, this is an oncoming train. It's going to pull into the station or crash. Regardless of what you do, your job is to intersect with it and do what you want to do with it, and before the actual like big bang that happens at the end. And I like having that as like a mechanic that's built in, that's baked in to a system. Like I think Blades in the Dark uses a clock mechanic. And I think those work really well for keeping the pacing really nice and steady for the PCs.
Yeah, clocks can be a really great tool. And you can introduce them into games as a GM, kind of like to reflect back. You can introduce those into games that don't have them necessarily. But yeah, Blades in the Dark has them. And they don't have to necessarily even be like in your game tied to real life passage of time. They're more about like actions and kind of like an action economy, almost. Like, you do this and clock goes up, or clock can sometimes go backwards depending on your actions. And I do find that they can be very helpful when used correctly in a game. I know that they were really popular like a couple years ago too. People were putting clocks into everything. It was just like the thing to do for a while.
I do something similar to that, and I think there are other games that do it. I'm just using one of my own games as an example. In Good Strong Hands, I structure it as a series of checkboxes, and it's basically like it's like old school, like D&D 4th edition skill challenges, where you've got to get a series of checks, a series of successes on various checks. And so you might be dealing with it might be fighting a monster, and it's just a series of checkboxes. Every success is like a hit and you're slowly whittling them down, or it's another challenge that just requires a series of things to happen. A series of successes to take place. And what I'll do then is, and it's described this way in the game, is you place milestones at different spots. So you might have a 10 checkbox sequence, 10 successes needed to deal with this thing. And at checkbox 3 and 7, it's marked as a milestone. And that milestone might be something very specific happens, or it might be just a milestone, and you're given some suggestions and you can tailor it to whatever the situation is. And like, one, you know, some of my favorite things in there, because of the nature of Good Strong Hands, is to have like, you know, there's a milestone that happens it's this thing that's, you know, you're dealing with a hostile entity that's, you know, trying to destroy the world on behalf of the void. And at 3 and 7, you know, like one of the milestones could be a townsfolk gets, you know, caught in the middle of everything and they are not prepared to deal with it. So suddenly there's that, because that changes the tempo of the combat, because it's not just like boom, 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 let's get this thing down. It's like, oh, we have to go deal with this thing now. So you can add these little, you know, add little milestones that give you other ebbs and flows that give it kind of change up the pace of just being a straight shot through a series, you know, a challenge or a combat. You know, I love the idea of like, oh, now somebody else is in danger. That's a great one for any heroic game, right? Or something important is stolen, or reinforcements show up, or something is damaged or blows up is always fun, because that creates all sorts of other things that have to happen. It can extend everything, it can create all sorts of, you know, it changes everything up, and it causes the a pacing that might have been just kind of a redundant, you know, like boom, 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 we're just going to get these checks, we've turned it into like a little roller coaster within a roller coaster. Like, you might be at the high point of the adventure, but now like the process of that climax has a little up and down, which can help that thing from keeping like feeling like a slog. If there's a lot of hit points or a lot of checks that you have to get through, there's like little points in there that you're breaking it up.
Yeah. I was thinking in terms of like the milestones that you mentioned, it's nice to have even like smaller scenes have stakes in them, like have something that the players are invested in and are potentially going to be able to have happen. That way it keeps kind of moving along. And the way you mentioned it about like having things that pop up, like someone else is in danger, so on and so forth, it reminds me part of the reason why I like Powered by the Apocalypse so much, because of when you're doing your roles, you usually get like, it furthers the role play, it furthers the stakes when you're rolling. Like if you fail, you get some sort of catastrophic failure where something different happens. If you're in the middle range where you succeed, but there's consequences of some sort, it still adds additional elements to the plot and additional elements to the scenes that the players can interact with and feel like everything's kind of moving forward. That's one of the only, well, I mean, I do like clocks, but I was going to say that's part of the reason I like PBTA is because it feels like these little additional like milestones or additions or bits and pieces of the scene that people can glom onto is just kind of baked into the system itself.
Another kind of version of this, I don't know if it would necessarily be a version of this. I recently played a game called Sentai and Sensibilities, which is a Jane Austen meets like Power Rangers game. And they have different modes built into the game. So you have your like individual not wearing your Sentai suit, like Regency era role play scenes. Just like in a Power Rangers episode, you have the teenagers doing teenager stuff first. Then the monsters start happening and you all suit up, and that's the next mode. You all suit up and you're all ready to fight, but you're still working more or less individually, but fighting the bad guys. And then the big monster comes up, or the monster transforms or whatever it is. And you have to join forces in your big giant mecha to then fight the big monster. And you're working together as a full team instead. So we have like these three different modes of gameplay, and it has the pace directly built into the game, combining all aspects of it and kind of blending those two genres. And in a way that I feel like really helps the pace along. The GM automatically knows like, oh, you're done here, next up, this part, next up, this part. And it has a very, very clear gameplay loop, and it plays just like an episode of Power Rangers. And if you haven't seen any Power Rangers or any other Sentai, that's the only Sentai show that I know. The other, I was the Jane Austen person in this playthrough that I did. Everyone else was like into the other genre, but it was a way that, like, even if you weren't super familiar with it, you kind of understood what was happening next and got the tone down. So not only did it help the pacing, but it helped like engagement with all aspects of the play. And I think setting up modes like that within your game, with a clear transition, after you do this, this happens in your game, it can really help smoothly move along role play. And I think modes like that can work in all sorts of games, not just a game with combat, but a game with romance and drama, or especially games that are based off of, though, like other pop culture genres.
I think something that can be handy too is to develop, if you're working on a game that is, you know, your own mechanics, or if it's a system that is conducive to hacking and kind of, you know, adding things to and modifying, is building the system out such that it can support both long extended, you know, ability check based sort of things, whether that's combat or you know, skill challenges that take a bunch of checks. So you can do a long extended thing like a combat, but can also handle like a type of thing that requires a little resolution, but doesn't have to just be one check, like isn't just like, oh, you make a skill check and do it. So it has a little more beef to it, but it's not going to necessarily take a whole thing. One of the things that I personally feel like you run into with D&D is that, you know, at certain levels, like every baddie you go up against has enough hit points that a fight is always going to last at least a little while. But if you, like, let's say you had a musketeer style game where at the end of the session, we want all the musketeers to take on the baddies, you know, all the soldiers of the baddie, and have a big rock 'em sock 'em, like we're going to be swinging from chandeliers and putting daggers in tapestries and sliding down walls and all that sort of thing. But earlier in there, we want to be able to have one of our musketeers have a duel against a single person that has insulted them, and have that duel not be a half hour long combat of one person, but have that duel be something that can be resolved in just a couple checks very quickly, and have the mechanics work to do both of those things. So you can have these punctuated moments of like, well, I have to make a couple of checks to have this thing happen. And it's still a combat. It's a duel. It's like even if it's a friendly duel where you're not actually going to kill somebody, you're going to subdue them or disarm them or whatever. But having the mechanics support that, you know, that's one of the downfalls of some systems that are heavy on combat, is that like, well, you know, unless it's just a schlubby minion that has one hit point and isn't much of a threat to begin with, like it's rules as written, you have to hack it into something else to have like, okay, here's a baddie that we're going to have a duel with, but not everybody has, you know, 75 hit points, and that fight's going to take forever. We want to be able to, you know, if you ever watch like a duel, like, you know, fencing duel, they don't take a lot of time. You know, it's a quick exchange of sword moves, and then somebody gets poked in the chest and the sword goes bendy, and they get a point. You know, you can have something like that, but it requires like making the system work both ways.
Kind of going off a little bit about what Jess was saying was about structuring games, like putting that into the design. What I did with Follow Me Down is I made it's specifically 8 scenes. It's a different environment for each one, but you know, going in when you're playing the game, it will be exactly 8 scenes long. And when you're done with a scene, you move on to the next scene. I have built into each scene as you're trying to find an object called a keepsake, and whoever's GMing at the time should give you the opportunity like once or twice to get it. But if you don't manage to get it, then you're going to move on regardless. Or if you get it, you move on shortly afterward. And that's helped a lot for people like going through that, where they know, I'm looking for this particular thing. I want it to be meaningful. If I don't get it, however, I know that I'm going to have to keep going. I know this is not necessarily something that you could do with every game, but since Follow Me Down is based on literally a journey into the underworld, I kind of loosely, I mean, it's Greek mythology inspired, but I also kind of loosely based it off of like Dante's Inferno and the different levels of hell. So it's very, very regimented and very structured. But usually that game, like if the players are confident and comfortable with the system, that usually plays out within like 3 to 4 hours, those 8 scenes. Each one tends to roll about 30 minutes, sometimes shorter, sometimes even 15. But I found that was really useful for keeping pacing when you're designing a game, when you're trying to use mechanics to make the players continue to move forward with the story.
I think it's also like a great selling point too. I know a lot of people are reluctant to say, oh yeah, let's play this game. We're going to get together. We're going to play this game, because they don't want something that's going to spill longer than a set amount of time. If they know in advance that it's going to take this long and here's what we're going to do, that can be a really big, that can be a really big reason for some people to want to play. And I think it works as well. It breaks out of that idea of a traditional style game, where it's like more improv based, it's more led by the players, and you're getting into more something that's more akin to like a stage production, which I think can be really fun and valuable. And I don't mind games like that. I really like games like that, because it hits the button of me of I'm engaging in a work of literature rather than just goofing around. And I have something to do here. I'm trying to accomplish this thing. And there's like, I think that there's a place for both styles, like a more free form, we can be doing whatever, and a more systematic one. I played a game. Oh my gosh. I cannot remember the name of this game either. I'm so bad with game names. But it's a game where you have to play it with exactly four people, and you're all aspects of this goddess of snow and winter, and you're hunting down a human in a forest, and there's a script that's like basically being read as you're playing. You get to describe what you're doing, and whether or not you're successful depends on your roles, and you're also like being really mean and pointed with the other players. Like the whole game is like this vie for control and who's going to be the most favored person at the end of the goddess. But it has a very, you know, you have this, and then you get home and you have the human or you don't have the human. And it's really, it was really, really fun, because I didn't have to worry about the pacing. I didn't have to worry about anything other than saying something quippy, rolling my dice. That's all I had to do in the end. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. I'm going to look up the name of the game because I want to recommend it. I think I talked about it a couple times, and it's just another like kind of version of that, where the scenes are set for you, but it's there for you and you're playing within this playset.
I find I've been researching the idea of downtime activities, for lack of a better term, but that is to say, like, the things that your character does that aren't necessarily driving the story forward in some way. They're not exploration, they're not role playing, getting information, they're not the combats or whatever. And somebody mentioned, and I don't know the specifics because I haven't read the game, but somebody mentioned that the Conan game, Conan the Barbarian game, has a like a carousing system where like you go out and you do barbarian stuff, and then like you use up whatever your abilities are, you're hurt or whatever, and you can't go and be a barbarian anymore until you go carouse, and then you go and you go to the tavern and you make some checks to gamble, and you buy some drinks, and you make some checks to seduce and suck face with somebody, and then you all fall asleep drunk and you wake up the next morning to the consequences of whatever your checks caused, because there's some random rolls and things in there, and then now you're off to go be a barbarian again and do the barbarian thing. But you've got these and that creates a very specific play, you know, kind of again, roller coaster, the up and down. Like we can go out and do the build up to the big fight, we're gonna go defeat this baddie, and we're gonna go, you know, save these people and blah blah blah, and then when it's all said and done, we're gonna carouse again and celebrate what we did, and that's gonna allow us to heal up our abilities and our wounds and get all these other things that happen. And it creates a, you know, a specific, it's what I referred to at the very beginning, like a game loop of like, now you eventually you have to get to the carousing, right? But then to design that in such a way that it has an effect on what's going to happen in the larger game is great, because your carousing has consequences. Like you suddenly owe somebody some money, or you, I saw somebody in a discussion I was having was like, they were describing a similar kind of thing where they were like, and then you wake up the next morning to learn that you joined a cult. And like, now that's a whole, and because you can, as a designer, then you can make that into story hooks too. Like all those consequences can be like a personal or a group story hook. Like, well, now this person thinks that you love them and are going to marry them, and but you've joined a cult, and like, oh, what else can all happen? And then but they're integrated in such a way that it all becomes kind of part of the game flow and creates a very specific pacing.
One of the, this is a little bit of a departure, one of the other things that I think really helps when you're designing a game and keeping pacing in mind is not necessarily relying on dice as your mechanic, as your resolution mechanic, using other things like, I think Dread is a great example of that, where you're building tension and you're building, like, the pacing, you don't have to worry about it lagging because every time you do something, you remove a block from that tower and that tower is going to fall and the players are just anticipating the fall. So it's hard to be bored when you've got that kind of like looming over whatever you're doing in that particular scenario. I also like a lot of games have been, newer games, indie games have been using decks of cards where you draw a card and it corresponds to something in the mechanics. And if you keep it to where you just have the deck and you don't like shuffle all of the cards back into it, the players know kind of that there's this building up of you're running out of cards. You're not going to be able to do X or Y or Z because the queen has already been pulled or the joker has already been pulled. And I feel like sometimes if you're using alternative methods as your resolution mechanic, like cards or falling block towers or other sorts of things, it can actually help just with the design-based pacing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you can roll a die as many times as you want forever, but you can't continue. You can only draw 52 cards if you don't reshuffle. You can only pull so many blocks from your tumbling block tower before it tumbles. And I think that that is exactly, I there is, again, I'm terrible at game names. We had Sharang on last time and he did a great job of saying every name and dropping names. I'm the opposite of that. I never remember anything and I don't think about it before I come on the show to remember what those names are. But there was a game about pirates and the mechanic was filling up, like, you like putting the dice in your water cup until it spills over, and that was another really interesting way to pace a game too. I think you're exactly right, Joey. The alternate, like, the more you think outside the box, the more fun, interesting ways you can switch up the pacing of your of the games that you're designing. And it helps, I think it helps a lot for players too to have other ways of engaging within a game. All right. And I couldn't find the name of the other TTRPG I was talking about. I tried Googling it and nothing came up. I'll have to ask the person who ran the game for me.
it kind of sounds like a variation of For the Queen, but I don't know if that's actually what it was.
No. Because literally after that, we played a game of For the Queen. It was very, very different. It was very, very different. But yeah. Joey, do you have anything final to say on pacing? Any last thoughts you'd like to add before you wrap this episode up?
I mean, it's going to be a challenge whether you are a GM or whether you are a designer or both. It's just something that you kind of have to keep in the forefront of your mind when you're creating a system or when you're using and hacking a system and when you're at the table with your players. Mostly just kind of monitoring, you know, whether your players look bored, whether they are not fully engaged with the story, and trying to make sure that you can do something to kind of bring them back into it. I think it's always a challenge, but there are a lot of different ways that you can adjust your style or create something new that will help with that.
Well, thank you again for coming on. Where can we find you and your stuff?
I am kind of on Twitter sometimes these days. I refuse to call it X because it's Twitter. It will be Twitter forever.
It's Twitter to everybody. Find,
you can find me there at A Wayward Moon on Twitter. And then also Drowning Moon Studios has a Twitter account. You can find all of my books at drowningmoonstudios.com. You can find it through DriveThruRPG under Drowning Moon Studios and then Indie Press Revolution as well.
You can find me at wannabegames.com or on itch or DriveThruRPG under Wannabe Games.
And you can find, and I'm at Nerdburger Craig on various social medias. My website is nerdburgergames.com. The games are all on DriveThruRPG, although the fancy schmancy versions, which cost the same as the print-on-demand versions of some of the games, are at the store on my website. So you can check those out there, and I can get you like the nice offset print run version of some of the games.
Thank you to our opening and closing theme song, which is Avel by Steph Sachs, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs, and thank all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time.